allowing for a chance of isolated showers and thunderstorms in western Illinois. Partly sunny skies, along with warmer weather, our forecast for the rest of the work week. High temperatures today will range from near 80 degrees across northern Wisconsin to near 100 degrees across southwestern Missouri. Overnight low temperatures will range from the mid-50s across northeastern Wisconsin to the upper 70s across western Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, mostly sunny with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Look for a high in the low 90s with heat index readings of 95 to 100. The wind from the northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear with a low of 67 and a light east wind. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high in the low 90s. The wind out of the south from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 74. The wind from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high in the low 90s and heat index readings of 100 to 105. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-70s. Friday and Friday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The high around 90 and the low in the low 70s. Saturday's outlook, partly sunny. The high in the upper 80s. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the mid-80s to the low 90s. Most locations reporting sunny skies. At Rockford, it was 86. At O'Hare, 81. Bloomington reported 89 degrees. 92 at Mattoon. In Carbondale, it was 90. At South Bend, 85. 87 at Lafayette. In Indianapolis, 88. And 89 at Terre Haute. Willard Airport reported a mostly sunny sky at the top of the hour, 88 degrees. The dew point, 76, giving us a heat index of 99. The relative humidity, 67%. The wind out of the west at 6. The barometric pressure, 29.90, and steady. And at 12:39, 90 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The Champaign School District is between superintendents while an interim is in place as the search begins for Arthur Culver's successor. His time in the post is limited. The law allows the school board to employ Dr. Robert Melito for only 100 days. That means a complicated calendar that has Melito representing the district for only a few days a month. Melito told Illinois Public Media's Tom Rogers that Unit 4 is a gold mine waiting to be tapped because of its achievements at the top levels. But there are challenges.
Number one, we have to find out what we're going to do with our two high schools. Central High School is landlocked, and it's a number of years old, and it's our historic traditional school, and I have a lot of respect for it. We've got to figure out what we're going to do for our students. Number two, our middle schools, we have three of them. None of them are air-conditioned. And we need to figure out what we're going to do there. The next item is academically. The board is very serious about increasing the rigor that is necessary to move through our elementary school, our middle schools, and to our high schools, because we want to be competitive with the suburbs of Chicago and other large school districts throughout this country.
How do you achieve that as an interim? How much do you think an interim can do in some of those longer-term challenges?
Well, in speaking with the Unit 4 board, we plan to come up with a list of focuses and goals that we will begin working on this year and actually outline for the permanent superintendent to begin immediately when he or she arrives, no later than July 1, 2012.
What kind of a challenge is it for an interim superintendent, considering that you have a limited amount of time that you have to work with, and the fact that you have these long-term challenges and opportunities that you probably wouldn't see to the end?
Well, Tom, it's a good question. I'm reading a book right now called The Tipping Point, and the main thing about that book is how little things can make a big difference, and that's what we want to find out, how little things can make a major difference in the future of Unit 4. Again, we want to work on academics, safe environment, living within our budget. What we also discovered is that possibly we haven't been as visible or communication hasn't been as open, as transparent as we wish, and we've got to strive to rebuild and possibly increase some of the relationships and partnerships that we need for a public school district to do well in the 21st century.
What kind of little things then would go toward that improvement in communication? And how do you envision the problem of communication? How do you break the issue down, I guess?
Again, another good question. I want your listeners to be aware of this. One of the directives the board has given me is they want me to go out and speak to the city government, the leaders, the chamber, the United Way, our parents, our teachers group, our administrators, and seek to understand what we need to change and improve upon. Again, Unit 4 has many excellent things, but like any organization, we want to improve and go to the next level for our students. There is still some lack of confidence and possibly a small amount of lack of trust in the operation of Unit 4. And the Board of Education has clearly told me that we need to change this, and we want to begin now with me as the interim superintendent and rebuild that confidence, rebuild that support for us, and then earn the trust of all these local agencies within the city of Champaign.
What kind of person would it take, you think, to handle this particular position?
I think throughout there's plenty of men and women who will wish to come to Champaign, to Unit 4, to be our next leader. We just have to make sure it's the right personality with the right skill and science and art of doing this job for us.
Does it matter whether or not the person is from within the district or without the district?
Actually, I'm open to both. I've always in the past looked inside. I've also looked inside the state of Illinois, but I realize there's some great leaders out there throughout our country. We just want the best person to lead Unit 4 to the next level for our students.
Robert Melito is the interim superintendent of the Champaign Unit 4 schools. He spoke with Tom Rogers. He says he'll help school board members in the new superintendent search in any way they want. You can hear the entire interview, including Melito's opinion of the state law that limits his tenure at Unit 4 to 100 days, at will.illinois.edu. The two sides got together, talked over their differences about money, and finally came to an agreement. 136 days after being locked out by owners, NFL players agreed yesterday to a 10-year labor agreement. Teams can start signing rookies and some free agents today, and some training camps opened as early as this morning. NPR's Mike Pesca reports.
The other team has the ball on their own 2-yard line down 3. Fine, no problem. But there's a short screen, then a long pass, a scamper out of bounds, and a series of first downs. You've gone from the good kind of nervous to the peptic ulcer kind. But just as you and your fellow fans are about to bite off your foam fingers, the opposing quarterback throws an interception. It takes only a few seconds to totally forget the angst and worry of the prior moments. That's kind of the case with the NFL labor negotiation that just played out.
It went according to script.
Gabe Feldman is the director of Tulane University's sports law program.
We knew all along if this deal didn't get done by March 11th, it likely wouldn't have gotten done until it wound its way through the courts and we were just on the verge of missing games. And that's where we are today.
And so we suffered through hyperventilation from Steeler to Raider Nation. But really, the logic of the situation never changed. The owners wanted more money. They got it. The players wanted greater workplace safety. They got it in the form of fewer practices and better health care. That's not to say that every part of the deal is unexceptional. While it's true that the average salary will go down, it could also be the case that the average player could be paid more. Andrew Brandt, founder of the National Football Post and a former team executive and player agent, explains how that works.
That's the unsung hero of this deal, minimum salaries. It doesn't sound like a lot, but they're all going up $55,000. About 900 of the 1,900 NFL players are making minimum salaries. So you add all that up, that will bring up the low into more of a middle tier than we've had before.
Also consider that the very top draft picks will be making far less money. Another boon to players is that the smaller market, or to put it nicely, thriftier teams, like the Bengals, Bills, and Jaguars, will have to maintain a payroll of at least 89% of the big-time teams. Andrew Brandt says this means that the players in the smaller cities won't necessarily receive smaller paychecks.
this is a new part of this agreement we've never had in the NFL before. They will spend, and that will rise all boats from the player angle.
A burgeoning middle class, the eradication of skinflint outposts, the end to an elite crop of youngsters receiving disproportionate pay, greater emphasis on health, a surprisingly lengthy 10-year deal. Has the NFL backed its way into the most socially progressive labor agreement ever? Well, there are no provisions for employee nursing stations, but it seems that by giving up some money, okay, many millions, the NFL players have achieved a workers' paradise. You know, except for all the broken bones and everything. However pleased both sides are with the deal, everyone knows that players and owners are not the game's most important constituency. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell spoke at a joint press conference after the deal was announced.
I think we ought to make sure we understand that our bond with our fans is probably the primary issue that all of us have to keep focused on, whether you're a player, whether you're an owner, or whether you're a commissioner.
Fans should be thrilled they won't miss even the preseason games they grouse about having to pay for. Owners and players get a decade of peace and profits, though players will still have to vote to reconstitute their union, which dissolved as one of the tactics of these negotiations. But soon, the only talk of arguments and judges' decisions will be a red-faced coach, strongly suggesting a back judge blew a pass interference call. Mike Pesca, NPR News.
Airline ticket prices have gone up in the last few days, although most people probably didn't notice the increase. That's because of a federal tax that airlines are not paying for the moment and a decision not to pass the savings on to customers. NPR's Wendy Kaufman has more.
Congress failed late last week to reauthorize the Federal Aviation Administration. That means the agency can no longer collect the ticket taxes that passengers normally pay. Those taxes add about 10% to the base fare, or about $40 on a $400 domestic ticket. It could have been a nice price break for airline travelers, but Rick Sini, the CEO of Fair Compare, says airlines raised prices by about the same amount as the tax.
So instead of the money going into the government coffers or into the consumer's pocket, it's going into the airline's pocket.
Among the major carriers, only Alaska Airlines slashed all its prices to reflect the tax savings. Joe Sprague is Alaska's vice president of marketing.
Frankly, it's the right thing to do to be able to pass savings like this along to the customers.
Alaska Airlines says its new lower prices will be in effect for any ticket that's bought while there's no taxing authority. So consumers can buy tax-free tickets now for travel well into the future. Consumers who bought airline tickets which contain taxes may be eligible for refunds if their flight occurred while no taxes were on the books. But just how easy that refund process might be remains unclear. Wendy Kaufman, NPR News.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 26th of July.